All right, Duke fans, get ready for it. This is episode number 529, part two of the DBR podcast conversation with Duke basketball star Ryan Young. I'm Jason Evans. I'm your host. I'm joined by Sam Klein. Donald Wine, by the way, is going to be a part of this a little bit later on. We recorded the interview with Ryan, as you know, a couple days ago, at least, you know, when you're listening to this. We're recording it now. You're going to hear it in a few days. I don't know. There's a whole time warp thing happening here. And Donald is in New Zealand. He may be in Australia by now, watching the Women's World Cup. Sam,
he's down there.
He's down there someplace. Yeah, exactly. A long, long way away. But let's get right to part two of our conversation with Ryan Young. We already talked to him about the current Duke team. We talked to him about his career and everything that he's doing individually. We're going to talk about some big picture issues now involving college basketball. Here's our conversation, second part of it, with Ryan Young. All right, man. So we're going to move on to our third and last category. And I sort of titled this big picture college basketball stuff and also some coaching stuff. And I want to start with the coaching stuff because Duke has a new assistant coach in Emmanuel Dildy. But he is not new to you. You played for him for 3 years at Northwestern. Talk about what he brings to the Duke staff. I have to think that John Shire talked to you about hiring him before he hired him. He wanted your opinion, I would guess, right?
Yeah, so we had a conversation or two just about my experience with Coach Dildy, and I'm super excited to be reunited with E. We had 3 years together, and it was awesome to learn from him. He worked a little more with the guards at Northwestern than I did hands on, but he was just an awesome person to be around. Chicago guy, he brought the right energy, and I'm excited to see him continue to do this at Duke. I know that Coach Shire was looking for a guy that was going to keep, that energy that Emil brought to the program. And so it's going to be really exciting to have him on board. I think he's done a lot of things. I mean, he's been in a ton of different programs and in a ton of different places, which is exciting because he'll bring a ton of fresh and new perspectives. He's seen a lot of college basketball. I think he might be... I don't know if he's been coaching for longer than Carwell, so he might be the coach with most experience on the staff, which is exciting, but he's just a vocal guy. He knows how to interact very well with the players and is a workhorse. So he'll be in there, every day working with guys one-on-one, putting guys through drills just good at really add to the chemistry of the program in general, but definitely the staff. And like I mentioned, he's incredible. In terms of player coach dynamic and being effective and getting his messages across to the guys and working with great players.
So as a team, you guys just got back from Chicago. You had that fabulous weekend. It was great to see pictures, the dinner you guys had. I think Saturday night looked unbelievable. I know you got to hang out with Grayson Allen, Jason Tatum, a bunch of other Brotherhood alumni. You guys went to McDonald's headquarters and stuff. What was the highlight, by the way? What was the thing you loved the most about the weekend in Chicago?
Yeah, gosh, there was a lot, and it was really cool. I was, I'd never been on just strictly a team bonding trip. It was exceptional. Honestly, we did a lot of incredible things. We met with some really high level individuals. A lot of our guys hadn't been to Chicago. Obviously, I spent a number of years there, so seeing the city itself wasn't too new to me. But met with a ton of very powerful individuals in Chicago and former basketball players and things like that, and fans of the program. So. It was another way to just kind of see how special this experience is. I feel like I try not to take it for granted. This was one of the weekends where you realize just, what a privilege it is to be a part of it. In terms of favorite things, you hit it on the head with that dinner. I mentioned it. I was talking to Quinn Cook about this. Not growing up an avid Duke fan, I didn't really know what the Brotherhood was. And when I had seen it or heard about it, I just kind of thought that it's the team slogan. It's something that is said, every team has a mantra. And when you get here, you realize very quickly that it's much, much, much more than that. And so being at dinner with those guys, seeing Jason Tatum, Grayson Allen, you know, Jahlil Okafor, Quinn Cook, all these guys, I'm missing a few names, all these guys come back, you know, just to come and spend time with us and talk to us. It's a big deal. And it means a ton to us. So that was my favorite part of the weekend, just seeing how important it is and seeing those guys interact with each other was fun as well. It's clear that they've, you know, stayed friends and stayed close together, even though it had been 8 years since that 2015 team won it. So it was just cool to see how close they, you know, have stayed. And obviously a ton of the advice and knowledge they gave to us was it was very cool.
I want to get to the part of the Chicago weekend that didn't happen, that you guys were supposed to have a NIL event and the NCAA said, no, they were not going to allow it to go through. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what you know about what happened, how any of that went down?
Yeah. I hope I'm not botching any of this because I didn't ask too many questions. I just know that it was a last minute that they told us we couldn't do it. I know that the trip to be considered a team bonding trip, there was not allowed to be any basketball events occurring. It was some sort of rule about if you could do the basketball event in Durham or in our gym, you were not allowed to do it when you're in a team bonding trip. So I believe that was the kicker and why they decided that we couldn't do it. Definitely a bummer. I know there was a ton of work and effort put into it and an opportunity for our guys to make some money. We didn't ask too many questions, but I think that was the main thing that we for us to go on that kind of trip. There wasn't supposed to be any basketball being played. And I knew that they were in communication, obviously, with the NCAA for a long time. And they must have just been going back and forth on it. And a few days before decided that it was not allowed.
Look, I'm someone who really follows the NIL landscape. I have people who talk to me about it a lot. Can I be so crass as to ask, what did you guys sort of think you were going to make from that event that got scrapped?
Yeah, we didn't even get to the point of knowing too much because it's all percentage based and not everybody makes the same amount of money. But we were going to sell. I know that we had sold a decent amount of the tickets. It was a small gym. It was a really cool gym. I'd known it from being around Chicago. It's in the West Loop and up on, you know, whatever. You're overlooking the skyline, which is super cool. But it's a small gym. So we were only going to sell, I think, 65 tickets. And they were expensive, $2,500 maybe, or maybe like $3,000. So there was a lot of money on the table. But it was all percentage based, broken up like that. So I wouldn't have exact numbers. And we didn't get, they'd canceled it in enough time in advance to, I don't know if anybody really knew what kind of monetization they were going to get from that.
That's cool. It's totally understandable. I want to ask a couple other NIL related questions because there's so many fans out there who feel like they, you know, obviously, look, we're all in favor of this. It is, if you ask me, it's a crime that players haven't been able to do these kind of things in the past. And it's great that the system has changed in the past couple of years, but there's still a lot that people don't understand or necessarily know about this whole system. And again, feel free. If I ask a question and you're like, I don't know, or I don't want to answer that, it's not a problem, man. Don't even hesitate. But can you just tell us, like, in general terms, you know, a really popular and successful player at Duke, give me a range maybe. Is there a sense of what a guy like that is going to be able to make from NIL in the current environment? Is it six figures? It's got to be six figures, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it's plus that. Again, I'm not in the weeds of it, especially like some of our young guys are. Like a guy like, you know, social media dominates so much of it. And so many of our young guys, it's so disconnected from Duke. I mean, one, it has to be, but also all of our guys have really high level agents that handle their NIL stuff for them. In terms of specific numbers, I think you'd be right. Certainly above six figures. I don't know. I you always hear about that Alabama football guys that are making seven figures. I don't think any of our guys are there. I'd say that they're not close. I don't know anybody's specific situation, but a lot of it is dictated by the agency that they're with. I know a ton of our dudes, Derek and Derek last year had a lot of deals that were completely done, through their agencies. But it's interesting. It's still, like you mentioned, it's still a gray area almost after 2 years. And it's still almost a dangerous place to be. I remember when they first started NIL Northwestern, we had a few meetings with the compliance office, but they were basically the school telling us, hey, this is allowed now. We're not going to be affiliated with it at all. Be careful out there. That was like the message. And it's still somewhat like that. I mean, we had that event ready to go, took months of planning, and then the last minute the NCAA said no. So it's still kind of scary to be out there with how much is going on. I remember just reading about the Miami stuff with the guy that was the prime NIL guy there. I know his company.
John Ruiz is his name. Yeah, he's in some financial trouble.
Yeah. Sorry? Did the company go under, right, or something?
It's close.
Company's being investigated.
Okay. So, like, you read and hear about that stuff every day, and it's still somewhat of the wild, wild west out there. We'll see how it progresses. I think our guys are hopefully, it seems like they're all in the right hands with the agencies that they're with. But yeah, that's for the most part. If I were to try and wrap NIL in a nutshell, so many of our dudes are high enough level that they've signed with agents and they have people, their teams working on them before they even get to Duke. And they handle a ton of that themselves.
And now I want to switch away from NIL for a moment. I know that I'm a big recruiting guy, and I my bet is you're not allowed to talk about any Duke recruits. I know that we've had Flory, but we had a couple of big men. Flory Badinga has been on campus. Cooper Flagg was here just in the past couple of days. Am I correct? You're not allowed to tell us anything about Cooper Flagg visiting.
I assume not. Yeah. And I'm a little bit, just as a 6 year, I'm less into the weeds of sure, recruiting, as you can imagine. But yeah.
So having nothing to do with those guys specifically, can you give us a little insight into what a Duke recruiting weekend is like for one of these, top end players, and what's the pitch to them that entices so many of them to come and play for the Blue Devils?
Yeah. I can tell you about my experience. I guess mine was very different coming out of the portal, because I knew kind of what I was looking for, and I had spent 4 years in college basketball. So I thought I had a good grasp of kind of what I wanted. It's the portal's a interesting place, not necessarily a place you want to be for too long. There's a lot going on. But I basically went on my visit, and it's a lot to Coach Shire about what impact he thought I could have on the program and his vision and being a part of his first team, what he thought, I could do here. I'd say for when we're having a high school kid on campus, it's the standard, whatever it is, 2 days. I don't know if that's changed since I've been in high school, but you're trying to show, it's a blend of trying to show, a high school kid all that the school has to offer. And the other side of it is trying to have them interact with the young guys on the team, so they get a better grasp of what the locker room's like, what the kind of players are like. I think that's a great selling point for Duke to the type, like I mentioned earlier, the type of attitudes and character we have in the locker room are, very high level. So it's between those two things. You're trying to have them meet with, the academics, show them what the school's like. You're showing them around the campus, talking to them about, how the program runs, what kind of things we do on a day-to-day basis. And then you're trying to get them to have some quality time where they can interact with the freshmen and sophomores, on their own, and they can ask questions to them, and they can, try to be in their shoes for a day. But as well as just trying to, see if the vibe's right, see how much they enjoy being around the guys, because you know, when you're a senior in high school coming on campus and you're meeting the freshmen and sophomores, those are going to be your teammates. You know, maybe not at Duke's a little different with so many guys even early, but those are going to be your teammates and your closest friends for the next few years. So I think it's trying to balance those two things out with, you know, show them everything that the school is made of, give them a ton of information about what everything's like here, but then also let them interact with the young guys in the program and just, you know, let them hang out with the players as well.
All right, Ryan, we're going to wrap this up. Man, you've been great. You've given us so much time, but we have one more thing before we go. We have a tradition here. If this is my tradition, every time we have a former Duke player on, we ask them for a Coach K story. But now we have to start asking for John Shire stories. I believe that you will be the first person to give us a legitimate Coach Shire story. You know, how did he inspire you guys? Something funny that happened. Go for it, man. You are number one in the Coach Shire story library.
A lot of pressure. I have a good story. I have another thing. In terms of, you know, the biggest thing that Coach Shire does for us, I know you mentioned earlier, I wanted to talk about how he motivates us. The biggest thing that I've taken notice of is just how active he is and hands-on in practice. You know, my former coaches, typically just based on the age gap, aren't able to be as hands-on as he is. So, like, you know, watching Shire play after practice against the managers and play with the low minute guys is really fun. Just watch him compete. He hasn't lost that competitive nature. I remember last summer we were doing a conditioning test and there was a number you had to hit. And we all ran it and did it and went downstairs in the locker room. And he did it by himself after one of the managers or one of the people timed him. So things like that are just quick and easy, you know, ways that I pick up very quickly to notice just how competitive he is. And, you know, in a way, he's kind of leading by example that way. The story I have for you that I gave Coach Shire a little bit of grief for in the middle of the year. This must have been maybe somewhat of a Coach K thing as well. Showing either movie clips or pieces of pop culture, whether it's a TV show or a movie or a clip from a different sports, you know, era or different sports, learning from the best. You know, Coach Shire does that a lot and tries to piece out different motivational tactics from it or just life lessons learned through different things. And one of the things we did last year in the middle of the season, he brought us in the locker room before a film session. We watched the last like 5 minutes of Shawshank Redemption. It was the YouTube clip of Andy Dufresne breaking through the wall. It's actually the clip of the warden coming in and trying to figure out how he's escaped. And it's where him and Red, I think.
Right.
Is the name. It's where they're learning that he had cut through, you know, for whatever 10 years or, you know, had cut through with the little axe, all that.
And perseverance. Yeah. Morgan Freeman talks about geology and studying rocks and how it takes time. Yeah.
Yeah. And he did all that. And he swam through whatever, I think Morgan Freeman says, like 3 football fields of human feces to get out. And it was really cool. And the analogy, like, as you can imagine, was Coach Shire talking about, you know, chipping away. It's not all going to happen in one. I can't remember what part of the year it was, but it was, you know, talking about, we're not going to be able to get over the hump. It's not going to be a one day thing. This is a long process. It's a marathon, not a race. That was the message. And I remember thinking right away, before he even showed it, he asked for a show of hands of who had seen the movie. And I might've been one of maybe 2 or 3 guys in the locker room that had watched it. I remember after thinking, like, Shawshank Redemption is a objective top 10, 15 movie of all time.
And yes.
Just ruined it for like 13 of our guys. There's no reason to like, you can go and rewatch it. But if you know that, you know, the movie loses all of its significance. So,
oh my God, spoilers. Yeah.
I remember giving him some grief about that because the message was great. And I know our team appreciated it, but yeah, ruined. If you hadn't seen the movie, that's the whole thing. That's an hour and a half of buildup that makes it an all time classic. So I figured I'd give you that story because it came to mind right away it was a bitter feeling knowing that the message was awesome, but I can't believe he spoiled the such a great movie for so many of our guys.
Two reactions to this. One, this movie came out almost 30 years ago. So, you know, spoilers that you're, you know, like at a certain point, it's sort of like nobody's fault anymore. The other question I had, Ryan, related to John Shire doing the conditioning drill. We asked you earlier who you given the ball to take a three-pointer. Is Coach Shire still the best three-point shooter on the team?
Gosh, there's days. There's definitely days where he gets out there and you're thinking that he could still be making some money somewhere playing. It's funny because he plays an older – I don't know what his game was like when he was playing here. I've seen some YouTube clips, but he plays this older style fashion of basketball where it's like – he's taking running threes, you know, like running jumpers and 3-point line. He's posting guys up and he's all, I mean, you can tell he's a super smart player, but there's days where he's shooting the ball and there's some thought that you want him on your team.
That's so, what he played like when he was in college. So he had an old game, I think, basically from the start. So
nice. Ryan, this was amazing, man. We really appreciate it. Hope we can talk to you as we get a little bit closer to the season again. It'd be a lot of fun. And again, on behalf of all Duke fans, God, we love the Brotherhood podcast. You're kicking it, man. You're doing a great job. Thanks so much for joining us and giving us some insight into that and everything else going on with the team. We appreciate it.
Thanks, y'all.
All right, so we're back from the break, and wow, you know, so much to unpack from this second half of our conversation with Ryan Young. Before we get to that, Donald Wine was able to record just a couple comments for us. Now, this is going to be his reflections on the entire interview we did, part one of a couple days ago, part two today. But let's hear from Donald about what he got out of this conversation we just had with Duke basketball player Ryan Young.
So, guys, I really loved this interview. First of all, it was so in depth. I think, you know, we mentioned at the beginning with him, we were trying to gauge the time and we said, oh, you know, 30, 40 minutes, that'd be great. And we talked for almost an hour with Ryan Young because it was so informative. Just, you know, again, everything from giving his thoughts on the team and all the individual players, you know, how much he loves doing the podcast and how that came about. And I thought that was really cool. And I'm glad that they're going to be doing it during the season as well. At least that's the plan right now. So I'm really, really just thankful that he's been on. I know we've been trying to get him on for the better part of a few months now and did not disappoint. Like from all the years that he's been in college and just kind of his experience from, you know, of course, across two different programs, you could tell that he's, you know, well put together as far as what goes into the life of a college student, and him being able to impart that wisdom on his younger teammates, I think has been great. We've seen it from the outside. It was so awesome to kind of get, you know, be able to peel back a layer of the onion and kind of go into the mind of a Ryan Young and really get to know him. It makes me more excited to watch him. And I know our fans out there, our listeners out there probably didn't need that motivation, but they're going to get it anyway from this interview.
All right, Sam, it's our turn now. You and I are back on, and let's chat a little bit about the end of that conversation. You know, the stuff about the event they had in Chicago and NIL and John Shire and the such. What was your biggest takeaway from all of this?
Well, I'm glad that John Shire is still running circles around these kids because they got to know. I'm shocked that, like, Ryan Young told we had this whole conversation about how Ryan Young's one of the old heads. And then he had to drop on us the "I don't remember John Shire in college, but" line, which really didn't sit well with me. But then he said, "Yeah, you know, Coach Shire gets out there. He's taking all these crazy shots. He's doing all this stuff. He's beating us in conditioning drills, etc." And I thought to myself, "That's definitely John Shire. He's, you know, I don't know when a man of his general abilities reaches his athletic peak, but it does not surprise me that at 35 or so, John Shire is still, you know, sending those kids around in circles. And I bet they get.
No, he said that he's legit the best shooter in practice sometimes. That's amazing.
It doesn't surprise me, right? I mean, like, that's how good of a shooter John Shire was in college. And when Ryan Young says that practice adds, you know, 20% to your 3-point shooting percentage? Does that mean that John Shire was like, you know, shooting 70% from beyond the arc in practice? I mean, that was pretty cool. So neat to get that reflection from Ryan Young.
Yeah. So my biggest takeaways from it are centered around the NIL stuff and the trip to Chicago. I loved his comments about the brotherhood on the trip to Chicago and that the brotherhood is a real thing that, you know, he sort of said that he thought it was kind of a marketing gimmick, you know, just a slogan. And then he arrived and talking to these guys, he's recognized that it really is something of a connection that all these guys have. And it's great as a fan to hear that and to know how significant it is in all of their lives. You know, obviously to me, the other thing is NIL. And it's interesting, you know, I think there are people who think that these guys may be making millions of dollars. I think Ryan pretty much, you know, he squashed that notion. But on the other hand, he made it pretty clear that there are probably a lot of guys in the Duke team. You know, I'll go ahead and guess like probably 7 or 8 guys who are making six figures. And Ryan certainly implied that there's some of them who are well into six figures. It's just, you know, obviously I think there are a lot of us who want to understand it a little bit better, but it is clear that this is a significant part of what a college ball basketball player's life is like at this point. And it was just, I was fascinated to hear him talk about it. I think he was pretty frank while also being properly circumspect.
You know, what's interesting to me about that is that these guys have, and this was part of the conversation about making NIL a thing, is that they are at their, like, for many of these players, they are at their peak recognizability and popularity when they're in college, because there are lots of them who don't really get to play professionally, or if they do, they're playing overseas. They don't really get endorsements. Or if they're playing like in the G League, like nobody in the G League's got, you know, is appearing in a McDonald's commercial or anything like that. So these are the moments that they get. And by the way, after they graduate, they also really can't take quite the same advantage of, you know, using the school network the same way that they can when they're in school. So the one of the things I wonder about is, like, you know, you're one of these guys at a top program. Maybe just because you happen to end up at that program, you make like $100,000 or $200,000 a year being a member of the Duke basketball team or whatever team it is. And then you go off into the workforce and you're not making that anymore. And your social media is not worth what it once was. So hopefully they're also getting good advice about what to do with the money, because I'm not sure that, look, I hope that Ryan Young's making lots of money, you know, throwing up TikToks or whatever. I don't know that he's going to still be making a lot of money throwing up TikToks in 10 years. So
right. No, that's very true.
It sounds like he's setting himself up well. So he's, you know, he's going to get a grown up job at some point and join the rest of us, and good on him. So
yeah.
Anyway, I think it's great. I thought that stuff was all very interesting and enlightening. And the challenging thing that I feel like Duke has seemed to do a good job of so far is grounding the student athletes and giving them the resources they need to understand the opportunities, but also not to make, I think, a lot of the mistakes that you would expect 18-year-olds to make when they are presented with large sums of money.
Look, I want to amplify a point you made about the fact that for a lot of these guys, this is their peak earning years. You know, think of a guy like Trevor Keels. Trevor Keels was on TV, was in the public eye, was in the basketball conversation a hell of a lot more at Duke than he has been since leaving. And that's not a criticism of him. That's just the reality of being a guy in the G League who, you know, who barely gets onto an NBA squad. Look, Mark Williams probably played more minutes on national television for Duke than he did for the Charlotte Hornets last year. Dude was a borderline lottery pick. So yeah, it's a great point about, you know, when they can sort of capitalize on this stuff. And I'm glad that Ryan gave us some insight into all that. All right, Sam, that's going to wrap it up for us on part two of the interview with Ryan Young. We want to thank him again for giving us so much time, for being so forthcoming and revealing and, you know, peeling back the curtain a little bit on a lot of really, really interesting stuff regarding the Duke basketball team. For Donald Wine, who's in Australia and New Zealand, for Sam Klein, I am Jason Evans. Thanks for joining us on the latest episode of the Duke Basketball Roundup. Here is the Duke Band to play us out and take us home.
Is it a report or a roundup?
It's a roundup. It used to be a report. Now it's a roundup.
It used to be.
Yes. Yes. We don't report anymore. We round up now.
Like, I'm still going with Duke basketball rapport. we're very kind to each other.
it's the roundup. So this wasn't episode 529. It was episode 528.6, but we rounded up to 529.
There you go. This guy went to Duke. also, before we start the real questions, Ryan, as a relatively recent Fuqua alum, I'm curious how the AMBA program is going or what your thoughts are on it.
It's going really well. So, yeah, I don't know how relevant the AMBA program was when you were here. I just did
They announced it when I was, so I graduated in 2020. Okay. And they announced that they were doing it, but it didn't like exist yet. So,
yeah, so I did the MMS program last year, and they offered, you were allowed to apply to turn that into an accelerated MBA. So that's what I'm doing right now. So far, I'm pretty intrigued by it. So it'd be great. Honestly, this year, in theory, should be a little easier for me because the MMS program was all the core classes. So your finance, right, was only finance, economics, accounting classes. And this year, I'll take only electives. So I'm pretty excited about it. I'll have to try to front load a little bit in this fall one and fall two terms, because I think I'll take more classes than I did last year, but I'm excited about it. We just had, today was the first day. I don't know if they did it. 2020 sounds like COVID, before COVID.
Well, so I graduated in 2020. So I was gonna say, are you doing orientation with the MBA students?
Yeah, so we just started today. We have 3 days of 9 to 5, which is—
Yeah.
It's—
of a lot of like pep rally stuff.
It's been interesting.
I was one of the orientation leaders second year. So I enjoyed that stuff a lot.
It's been awesome. I'm going to see if our whole cohort can keep the energy up, because today was a ton of energy. It was great. I'm wondering if be able to keep it going for 3 straight days. But they, so far, awesome.
Are they telling everyone they have to go to Shooters on Friday?
Yeah, it's a lot of the talk. A big Fuqua MBA thing seems to be Tavern Tuesdays. I don't know if that was a big deal. That's a lot of the talk as well.
We'll have to check in with you at some point, like later in the semester, about how that's going. But yeah, I love all that stuff. So extremely cool. Glad you're getting that experience. All right, now I'm going to start the real questions.